Sancho.
Good morning, honorable members, the officials from the Department of Trade and Industry, our guests, PMG, the people from PMG, you are all welcome in this meeting. It is not going to take us the whole day, but it needs your 100% attention. Hopefully, the members, the committee members, none of you will run away so that we deal with this immediately. We deal with this effectively. So I hope, Mr. Singh, if you leave us, you leave us with a few questions to ask to the department, so that we are able to carry on with our job. It's our first meeting with the Department of Trade and Industry. It's our first engagement. Hopefully, it's not going to be the last one, because we are working with SOCs that we think are very viable and are very important in the economic development of the country. I am now going to give over to the...
I've already to the chairperson, but the Bangpa also want to be able to join us today, and Chaluyengi.
Those are our apologies. Any mover in accepting the apology of Honorable Sidi and Honorable Lubala. So I will now give over to the Department of Trade and Industry to briefing us on the contribution of state-owned companies to the industrial policy and how the department assists SOCs to contribute towards industrial development. That is our point that we are going to discuss amongst others. Welcome, Honorable Mayor.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the committee for inviting us for this very important presentation. Let me just introduce the team from...
Sorry, I forgot that we don't know each other. Okay, I will let you introduce your team, and I will introduce the members will introduce themselves.
Okay, my name is Lionel October. I'm the Director General of the Department. I'm with Stephen Hannibal, who is our Chief Economist, and then Zumoho Makube, who is our Chief Director for Procurement, Industrial Procurement. And Saroj is our Parliamentary Officer here.
By the way, I'm Bukizwa Ranto, the acting chairperson for today. Otherwise, I'm the group employed by the AEC in the committee.
Good morning, ex-chairperson, the department. Sorry for coming late. And Susan Yenge, I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, members. My name is Geli Mubanda, member of the committee.
Good morning, colleagues. My name is Moss Geli. I'm a member of this committee as well.
Good morning, Eric Varini, member of the committee.
Sarabadani Nongat, Narayan Singh, member of this committee.
I'm Lee Bramwell. I'm the parliamentary researcher.
Thank you.
Can you introduce yourself? Where you can let that extended in the
list. I'm April Timmy.
Hi, good morning. My name is Joseph and I'm from Sydney.
The name is Vincent Roger from Public Enterprise.
Thank you.
Hi,
my name is
I think we Mr. Tuba, we can carry on with the process. But I must make also an apology for our content advisor. It's been a long time that you do not see the content advisor amongst us. The content advisor is not well, but he will join us sooner than we think.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I won't go through each and every slide, but I'll just speak to the core question that you asked. But just by way of economic context, as we know, our strategic economic goal is to reach the 5% GDP growth by 2019 in terms of national development plan. We're currently facing a global slowdown, and it's especially characterized by the falling commodity prices. I think the key point we want to make is that South Africa, for its growth throughout its history and over the past 10, 15 years of our democracy, has relied on commodity prices to either grow or to get itself out of any problem, whether it was the gold price in the 70s, or whether it was platinum prices, or whether it's iron ore prices and coal. But every time we've had a reliance on our mining raw material exports to drive our growth and so on. That model is no longer viable or possible. And what the National Development Plan talks about is diversification of our economy. And in our context, diversification means industrialization and development of our agricultural sector as the core drivers of our economy. We can't just rely on mining, but we have to really rely on manufacturing, we have to rely on agriculture and even value-added services. What has happened is that there has been a step up in investment from all sectors. SOEs, which we'll come to a bit more detail, but SOEs over the past 5 years have significantly increased investment, so as foreign investment, so as domestic investment, but not at a sufficient scale for us to deal with our legacy of underinvestment or for us to deal with unemployment and the problem. So the key strategic goal is to increase the level of investment. And this is important for this committee, is of all the key players in our economy, and there are really two major players in terms of investment, it's the state-owned companies and private sector. And our argument throughout will be that the SOEs play a critical role for us to raise the levels of investment. As we know, the President in the State of the Nation just introduced the 9-point plan to be able to address our economic challenges. And from the 9-point plan identifies the state-owned companies as fundamental to our economic recovery. And that is fundamental in the following areas. The first thing is the rollout of your network services, whether it is energy, broadband, or rail, has a direct impact on growth. And as we could already see, just our energy constraint has led to a loss of GDP of about 1%. So we would have been growing at 3%, we're now growing at 2%, we would have been at 3% if it wasn't for the energy constraint. But we're also saying is the other big part that SOEs play is really in contributing to our value-added exports and the role of Transnet and the TNPA is critical for our value-added exports. The third big role of SOEs is really to be able to localize to create localize and create a domestic industry, whether it is building locomotives, whether it is aircraft, whether it is shipbuilding and so on. State-owned companies are the biggest procurers in an economy and are usually the drivers of domestic industry. So in summary, then what we are saying is that in terms of just rolling out infrastructure, that has a direct impact on our growth. And if, for example, we're saying the gap between the 2% that we currently have and the 5% we want to be, in that gap lies that if we can achieve full it's going to resolve the energy constraint. If we can roll our broadband and if we can roll our rail infrastructure, we will be able to increase growth at between 2.4 and 3.2% and so on. And that is how critical the SO is are in terms of our original goal of 5%. So what is the problem, what is the current challenges? We're putting this very stockily, but we're saying that we have, especially in the 90s, we have SOEs that have not done and delivered on their core business before 2009. I think, as I said, there's been a vast improvement over the past few years, but before, if you take, for example, what happened is people were more concerned with corporate restructuring and disposing of assets. So, for example, restructuring of plants to sell the waterfront, or SAA trying to sell off some core assets, rather than focusing on the core business, which is being a transport, a rail transport company, or a telecom which is rolling out broadband. That is the core business, and we think that if we can stick to that just core business, it will contribute to growth rather than trying to sell off assets. Just again to repeat why we're strong about this is, for example, it was really a positive development when Transnet and Brian Molefe stopped selling off and reducing the balance sheet. And he stopped that process, and I think what you have now is Transnet now has the balance sheet to be able to raise funding, to be able to invest, and will go through the massive rail program that they have unveiled. It's only possible because they have a strong balance sheet. So I think the big mistake was trying to reduce the balance sheet in the late 90s and early 2000s rather than expanding the balance sheet so they can perform their mandate. And so, as I indicated, the one big area where we see the SOEs playing is in terms of procurement and localization. Our government has committed in terms of the MTF to 75% of state procurement must go to local companies. That is the target we have to achieve by 2019. We think that the SOEs, and there have been, and we will show very good examples, where the state-owned companies have been delivered, especially Transnet and CRAS have started to do that. Let me then spend a bit of time on the E1, which is in the procurement, and we add as the TTI and interact with the Department of Public Enterprises and the state-owned companies. What we're saying is that especially for large fleet procurements, like in the rail procurement, which I think the Bohoy has worked extensively with Transnet on, and so on. But there we can see we can recreate and revitalize our entire locomotive rail industry, and we on the back of that program. So localization of public procurement. There's also another program which we utilized before the emphasis on localization, which was called the National Industrial Participation Program, which is more famous for it's what it did during the arms deal, but it's called the offset program. But this is again, when there is no localization or designation, this is an alternative option. I won't spend too much time on this issue. This slide just gives you the extent of the purchasing power of government within the economy. As you know, we roughly government makes up one third of your economy, and so 15% and 25% of GDP, and GDP is at 3 trillion rand. That is the extent of which government buys goods and services, and then we will then be able to change our balance of payments, everything, if we utilize this. The rest of the slide just gives the examples of the different instruments we had, and at the bottom we just want to say we've also signed a local procurement accord with business through the NetLAC process, and that says if government does agree to procure certain goods, the private sector will also reciprocate, but also combine from local industry. So this tool has strong support and so on. So these are the regulations we use, and currently what happens with, we have what we call designations. This is under paragraph 9(1) of the Preferential Procurement Act, and that empowers the Minister of Trade and Industry to designate a sector for local procurement. So, for example, we did buses, and over the past few years, you can see we used to, before 3, 4, 5 years ago, all our buses used for the 2010 World Cup, all of it was imported from Brazil by Marco Polo. If you take it now, it's designated as a product that says 60% must be local, and we've completely recreated the bus industry, and you'll see here in Cape Town, my city, here via Arien, all of them now buy buses locally, and we've been able to open new factories, and new factories have expanded with regard to that designation. So that is how, by designating for local products, we can create a local industry, and we've already proved it's not even theoretical anymore. All the buses are now procured locally. The advantage that Africa has is that we do have the domestic capability to do all these things, both buses, both trains, and so on. So that is the key tool. But what we want to come to is that paragraph 9(1) is used. But the one issue we want to bring to the attention of, and again, this is probably the most important slide that we said, is that it's a regulation 9(3), which really gives the power to the state-owned company to be able to, before issues a tender, to specify local content. Now, as I said, if you take the whole Israel, they have really been driven by your 3 or 4 big SOEs, by your Transnets, your Prasas, your Eskoms, are the key drivers of your, especially your iron and steel industries. Now, what we are saying is that the responsibility for localization and industrialization is a national government priority. It's not a DTI priority. It's, and therefore, the SOE should, as themselves, not only wait on government or Minister of Trade and Industry to designate a particular product. They can decide themselves to procure different products locally. And as I indicated, historically that is what was done, that all the procurement was locally. South Africa was the biggest manufacturing of locomotives on the continent. We were a major exporter of locomotives to the rest of the continent. So it is possible, it has been done, we do have the capabilities, world-class capabilities in our SOEs, but they need to make the strategic decision. This will then also mean that it's driven by the CEO and the board of the SOEs drives localization, and it's not just the director they get from National Treasury to do so. So, Honourable Chair, I think if we can, this is really the key message we want to say, is that the regulation 9(3) is a critical tool to be able to increase employment and localization in the economy. So, as I indicated, I'm going to go through all. There are alternative levers as well that has been used historically. It's something is the SOEs have been using is called the Competitive and the Supplier Development Program. As I said, these things have been useful in the sense that they develop local suppliers, but not at the scale which they've done recently. We would rather prefer that it be direct localization rather than using these programs, which are weaker programs like Competitive Supplier Development and the National Industrial Participation Program. This just gives you some examples of some of the designation that ESAs have done. Up until to this time, we have designated 16 sectors already for local content over the past 2 or 3 years. We now also, this would include, for example, transformers, electricity pylons, and buses, as I indicated. So we have done all that already, and we really just require implementation and so on. Let me then just give two examples of why SOEs are so critical to our economy. If you take the automotive industry, which, as I said, makes up 7% of GDP, and he's one of our largest export earners. Over 100 billion rand is earned from the exports of our Mercedes-Benz, our BMWs, Volkswagen, and Toyotas, and so on. As you know, we have a substantial automotive industry in the country, and we're growing that industry. It is necessary that we get our goods. As I said, the auto industry exports to over 140 countries. It needs an efficient port system in order to get its goods to market. But we have seen a decline in some of the capacity, and we give the example here of reliability was 63%, it's now 52%. The turnaround times are sometimes slow, which slows down our exports. And those are just some examples of how critical that is. But I think the good thing is about this industry, we have been able to manage to create a proper forum between the automotive sector and the SOEs in order to look at how we can get better synergies, coordination. But really, so this is just an example of how we say the critical role of Transnet and the DNPA in driving economic growth. And this is the core business, and should be the core business of Transnet. We've shown that it can be done if the parties work together. This example must be, as I said, extended to all other sectors of the economy. Another example of collaboration and where the SOEs play a critical role is just in the operation of KISA process. Through the Operation Pakistan process, we unlocked two major areas of growth in this economy. The one was by agreeing, firstly, to turn Saldanha into an oil and gas repair facility and to invest in the infrastructure in Saldanha. If you go now to Saldanha, you will see, and the president launched it 2 weeks ago, but 9 billion rand is now invested in Saldanha. 7 billion from Transnet, 2 billion from the private sector, and soon we will be able to fulfill that role of being a oil and gas hub for the entire West Coast. That process was unlocked at the Operation Pakisa process by all government departments, as well as the Transnet was present at the Operation Pakisa. And the second thing that was unlocked was in order to get the Kuga IVZ and the Kuga port moving, they needed to designate and transport the manganese from the Northern Cape via Kuga and not via Saldanha. Again, that has been done now, and Transnet has committed to investing, and they've been issued with a license about a week or two ago. Cabinet approved the license, the issuing by the Minister of Transport for the license to the Kuga Port Authority to operate it as a maintenance terminal. Again, even the rail link then from the Northern Cape to Kuga, it's about a 2.3 million rand investment in operating that rail link and so on. So we will have a very efficient rail system now, and that is just two examples of how Transnet strategic decision has both created work around the West Coast here in Saldanha, but also on the East Coast in the Eastern Cape, massive revival of industries, and then in the Northern Cape itself, and along the corridor, and so on. So that is again a really positive trend that we have seen. This thing just gives you the figures there. As I said, Transnet has unlocked 5 billion for maintenance and refurbishment, upgrading of port facilities, and so on. In turning to some of the challenges still, we unfortunately, in terms of our value added exports, and it was again confirmed by the World Bank, if you're exporting raw materials, you get a subsidy. Well, you get some of the lowest prices in the world. But if you export value added products like a motor vehicle, you pay the highest in the world, and so on. So the biggest constraint of some of our exports is the high cost of our tariffs and our transport infrastructure. So this is a further matter that we need to address. We've seen the extensive engagement over the past year or two with the VNPA, but they have to rebalance their pricing model. And they should do what every other country does, that is, you rather charge your primary exporters more, and you actually give a discount to your manufactured exports and so on. let me then just get to conclusion. I'm just saying where there have been two key success stories and where we can serve as an example of how we have been able to revitalize an entire industry through the decision. The first one is PRASA's Rolling Stock Program. This is not the current one which is in the news, but this is the 7,000 new coaches, $123 billion, will be deployed over the next 20 years. This contract has been issued to Alstom, which is a French company with strong, will be investing locally, but this one will create 8,000 jobs. But more importantly, it will recreate our this industry in the country. And that's the PRASA one. This just lays out some of the details, but as you can see, over the long term, the massive impact that this procurement will have and on the program. The second major one is really Transnet's decision to also buy locally. Completely new factories will now be established, or is being established. Training of our engineers, of our technicians, and so on. There's been both with China, China North and China South Rail, with Bombardier, and with GE. GE is also making significant investments now on behalf below that. So, as I said, this is again another example where we are massively recreating an entire industry, and we can become an exporter of rail equipment. This just gives you some of the figures of this one. I think that this again just highlights some of the figures I spoke about previously about the investment in Saldanha, which as I indicated is a total of $9.2 billion investment. As you know, we have detailed industrial development zone in Saldanha, in Kocha, in Rudersberg, in all the major ports. So this is really giving a major kickstart to our industrial development zone here in Saldanha. The other ones we are where there's been expensive investment is the others as well, is London, Port Elizabeth, Muscle Bay, and so on. As I said, there's strong capabilities in and these are we will conclude with these two case studies again. Danel and Transnet Engineering. These are world class companies. But what we're saying is they don't play only a role in themselves, but they can create an entire industry or cluster around them. If you take, for example, the example of Danel, they just released the results 2-3 days ago. But Danel has completely turned the corner. They are highly profitable now, but they have an order book of 35 billion rand. So we are now supplying Middle East and South Asia with defense equipment. But it's not only the knowledge of the fact, there's a whole cluster that they've taken with them, Aerosuit, and all these other companies we've mentioned here. But as I said, we can also currently, the now, as I said, is now turned the corner and can become a major exporter and export earner. But it's also, again, busy developing the small regional aircraft for the continent, which can be basically an African taxi. And that indicated that again, it's not a projection, it has shown it can be done. And then even other kind of companies in the industry like Aerosuit, now for Airbus, during the minister likes to give this example, but it's really a success story. As you know, when we were going to buy the Airbus, they said there will be some contracts to Aerosuit. But then we didn't buy those Airbuses, so Aerosuit had to compete with all other players globally for the contract with Airbus, and it still won the contract to supply Airbus. So it won pure capabilities and competitiveness. So, as I indicated, it shows that we have the capabilities we have. The similar one is, as I said, Transnet. It's really to, we have also other manufacturers of locomotives like Grindrod, Rail, and others, and if we can collaborate between the different sectors and buy our products locally, we can get it. So then, in conclusion, then we think that the really critical role of SOE is really to perform its core business, which is create a network of infrastructure that is energy, rail, and broadband. It's the key infrastructure we need to move to 5% growth. And then secondly, if they also localize these investments, we can then re-industrialize and deepen our industrial base, add value, and create jobs through those levers. And then finally, as I indicated, if SOEs can use the levers given in the Act, which is Section 9.3, which is really where they themselves say which products they will be developing locally. Thank you, Anuj.
Thank you,
Mr.
I'm going to open up now for members to ask questions. So, interest by hand. Honorable Nobanda, Honorable Morabel, Honorable Mare, thank you, Honorable Sede, and Honorable Bulet, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to say I'm thankful for this presentation. My question is on the regular interaction between DTI, SOEs, and the DPE. And that in your interactions and the SBN, ensuring in your interactions between those interactions, how do you ensure implementation of policies, objectives, and everything that will improve the economy? Number two is, are there other SOEs contributing successfully to the mandate of the DTI? My question is based on most of the presentation is based mainly on Transnet and just a little bit of the net. What about other SOEs? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, and let me just really welcome a very insightful presentation by the DG from the Department of Fair Trade and Industry. My apologies, you are Chairperson of Trade. Okay. My apologies. Yeah, I think about two questions or three questions that I really want to ask the DG. The first one that I really want to understand, in the light of a number of challenges that the state-owned companies in the form of its own management is concerned, how does that in itself affect the functioning, and how does it portray us outside in the line of ensuring that we champion all of the objectives that we need to comply with as a country? How does that affect us in your own view as a Department of Trade and Industry in terms of management general? Because you know that for a variety of reasons we find ourselves, we are the state-owned companies in the form of boards and all of that, top and change, suspensions, allegations of wrongdoing and all of that. And how does that actually affect the business and all of it in the view of the Department of Trade and Industry? That was the first question. The second question could be that without really compromising the competition itself, don't we think that it is high time that we, if we are to do very well, make sure that we get spin-offs out of the state-owned companies? Because I think the presentation is quite clear to say that they are able to play a very strategic role in the growth of our economy. Now, for some reason, I think it's certain that we need to be sort of selfish as a country without compromising the competition by actually protecting the very same local industries, because we find ourselves playing with bigger people in the markets, and well experienced, and some of the very same companies are very well run and all of that. So don't you think it is time that government takes a very radical stance to say that let us really protect our industries in the very same way that the China is actually doing with its own state-owned companies? Don't you think it is actually high time that we do so? Okay, the last one, not the real one who asks. In the view of a DTI, are the state, state-owned companies and public procurement policies making any difference in the South African economy in localization efforts for industrial development? That's what I really wanted to get the sense of. No offense, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I really appreciate the attendance here today because I see the investment by Transnet in the Palama Bay area harbors, if we have to wait. The interlink between your department as far as the IEV is concerned. We had a very extensive conversation and it was actually by Transnet about the whole role of plans for Transnet to actually put harbor and everything. I would really appreciate it just very briefly in 3 minutes time, so just brief this committee, because there's an interlink between Transnet and the Department of Trade Industry as far as the IEV is concerned. It is written in the newspaper around about 30 licenses already being approved and signed or something like that. We just update it a little bit on the IDD because if we can understand the whole picture of the interlink between your department and the SOC Transnet moving forward. Thanks, sir.
Thanks, Chair. With regard to the contribution that the SOCs are making towards the creation of jobs, I know your product has mainly been around Transnet, but I'm interested in knowing overall in terms of the SOCs, how much contribution are they making in terms of assisting us to meet the target around economic the country's target around the creation around the creation of jobs overall, as I've indicated. The second one talks to the issues of procurement, and I'm most interested in the challenge that we always come across in the light of you now targeting SMEs at local level and the like, as indicated in the presentation. I'm most interested in the challenge of funding. To what extent are we able to detect companies that are using our people? Running them while they are not necessarily getting the necessary benefits, not being powered. That's only for them to be able to get to provide the necessary services in government. I think the last one talks to the accord that you spoke about with the private sector. I'm also interested in the legality of the, our compliance around this private crime, complying to that accord. What is it that you do if they don't necessarily comply in terms of the accord that you signed with the private sector? What happens? So I'm just like interested in to what extent are they bound? Are they bound to the accord? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. And unfortunately, I'm covered in the trade area that I wanted to pose questions on. But let me just pose one in relation to localization. The 75% accessibility of local companies. It's quite a commendable approach that you are following, as pronounced by the Vice President. And as trade and industry, we are cutting across. You have a role to play to ensure that it does happen on a number of ways, but in different departments. Then what is it that you can advise on the part of the SOEs to assist local companies in terms of capacity in order for them to rise to your occasion? Because 75% local content without capacity will be problematic. And you need much more resources to get to the level of the global competitors already.
So what is it that can happen to actually ensure that if capacity building and more skills and empowerment in the local producers?
Thank you, honorable members. I just want to pose few questions. The first one will be linked with the first question that honorable Novanda has asked. If you in your presentation, you spoke about the importance in your presentation, you said the problem statement that SOEs have is not doing what they are responsible for. What is that? What is that that they are not doing? Can you unpack more or of it? And she has already said what structured what is the structure that is interacting between the DTI and the SOEs? Do you have a structure that is there, that is always linking the DTI with the SOEs? The other question that I have is also maybe linking to the question you have honorable speaking about localization. Are we speaking about localization as a concept only, or does this localization really have an impact on the ground? Could you give us an example of the impact of the localization concept on the ground? You know, we've got this SOC. I see that your presentation was mostly really on few SOCs. We've got an SOC that is under the public enterprise, which is SAPON, which I think it should also have a big impact on the ground, rather than giving out, rather than doing in this project, the program that they are doing of building crashes and helping the schools with whatever they but also called to me, we've got so many areas that have got big trees that can be used, but SDGI, what role are you playing in that unleashing a certain potential from USAFCOL that they have, that they think they do not have in economic development around our natural resources that we have, which are trees. The other question is in the slowing down of the economy of China, or the slowing down of the economy in China, what will be the impact, or what influence will it bring to us as a country, seeing that we have a relationship with that country? And why is our speaking about our commodities, why is gold price fixed outside of our country? Why do we fix that the gold price? I also see that here you have you spoke about it. I think it's something to do with export or importing, but in the Transnet program, or with Transnet, Transnet is charging a lot of money for exporting goods out. And there's a company that came to us, Fruit Growers Association, that complained about the prices, that the price that they are paying for exportation of their products. But yesterday in the portfolio committee on economic development, there was a presentation that we were given that states that the economic development department is actually negotiating what is this thing to export free exportation within the SADC region. Do you have maybe information? Are you able to speak to Transnet as a company or as an LOC to get into that field so that when it exports to the or imports from the SADC countries re-evaluate its price tariffs, because those countries are countries that are suffering as much as we are. So our economy is also not that much. It's also not in a good position. Can Transnet help us in exportation of the goods and reduce at least the prices of exportation? Thank you. I think that's all that I have for now.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think, as I said, my colleagues will come in, and especially Stephen on the pricing one, and then also Tabor, who works on a daily basis with the companies. Let me start off by maybe, Chair, getting to your question, and I think why we have been, I think you take the point firstly that we should add SACCOL. To the list, because as I said, the key forestry is a major sector in the economy, and SACCOL can play a good deal. But the reason we are emphasizing those four or five SOEs, and it's very deliberate, because if you take the companies that have an impact on economic growth and can add up to 0.5%, 1% growth in this economy, you're talking about really the big hive. You're talking about Nel, you're talking about Transnet, you're talking about Prasa, you're talking about Eskom, Petro SA, and then to add SACCOL. I think you're really talking about if they make strategic decisions that has a major impact on the economy. So I think, as I said, our core focus now is to get the economy moving and jobs created. We should really completely laser focus on them. And that is why it's very deliberate. And as I indicated, the entire manufacturing industry revolves around the decisions of these big industries. And so, when you said what they are not supposed, they have been diverted. And as I said, it's the same question about the honourable member asked about what is the management problems in how does that affect us. Let me say that I want to say it's not important, but really the management decisions is not fundamental. Just like Anglo American also fired Cynthia Carroll, you know? But what we are more concerned about is what are the strategic decisions that SOEs make. Now, for example, what do we expect companies to do? For example, we expect for Transnet has two core functions. It is a port operator. It must operate our ports so that we efficiently and cheaply manage to get our goods to overseas markets. It is a port operator. Secondly, it must get our goods to the ports, which means it must have rail lines to transport it. And instead of building railway lines and getting those going, it has not been done. So all of our goods, even raw material now, coal, is being transported on trucks instead of on rail. So Transnet is a rail transport company. And that's why I said they will spend more time discussing how you sell the waterfront, how you develop the balance sheet, corporate restructuring and so on, whereas they didn't perform their core job, which is to get goods to market. And if you look at the two big investments that Transnet has, it's positioned iron ore line from the northern Pedro Saldana, and then you have the coal link to Richards Bay. But that is all not done by the current generation of Transnet. It is old investments of Transnet. They haven't built a new one. That's why I'm saying, that's why the first major decision they've made now is this manganese line. to
the second crystal do you know about manganese in the world? That's the thing, but those things have, there's no line to do it. And they made now that decision to rebuild the Aya Kucha, to use Kucha to transport the manganese. So that's what I'm saying is, if they just do the core business, that is, get our goods to market via the rail, and then once it's in the port, get it out efficiently. And that is more important than any of the management, the corporate governance issues. So, I think about our cooperation and coordination, which the member asked about, is that, and our working relationship with them. I must say that over the past 2-3 years, there's been a big change, that we really get very strong cooperation from many of the SOEs. But it is still not a culture. It is still, for example, if we've got a company, PowerTech and Aberdeen, they supply Eskom. We told them these companies are now going out of business because you are importing the transformers from India. Why can't these companies can make it here? They used to make it for you before. They say then they will ask us, they will be bureaucratic and say, where is the dump of designation from National Treasury to give us an instruction to buy local transformers? And without that note, they won't do it. Now, if you go to any country, if you go to Germany or you go to France to Alstom, there's no law which tells people that you must that Alstom must make the trains or Siemens must make the trains in Germany. It is just given. They just hold all the trains in. Air France doesn't buy anything but Airbus. You'll never find Air France trying to Boeing. In the US, they've got an act which just says all the rail equipment, all those things must be bought in America. Not only it must be bought in America, the mining must even be done in the US and so on. But in South Africa, we don't have that culture yet. And I think so, it's the big key thing. But that's why we're saying it mustn't only be that we must be as a lobby group to try to bestow, it must be themselves, the SOEs are seen as their role to buy locally. So it's a question of getting it embedded. And that's why I think the leadership that you have given over the past few years has seeped down as to the top levels of the SOE management. It's not right down to procurement managers who are seeing it, and the board can comment on that. I think languages
in... If I can interrupt you, before you say they must buy locally. Do we have that for the capacity as South Africa?
Yes, you know, you've got, it's not called, we are a very fortunate country in that we actually have much more advanced capabilities than even, and definitely than within China, much more capabilities than even some of the European manufacturers. So the reason is, if you take, for example, the manufacturing of buses, we designated that and everybody, we all these new buses you see on my city or on the Rio Bahia, all of them are produced locally. But we just made the decision before that we want to buy them from Brazil. There was the capability. But what happens if you don't buy from people, then of course they're not going to invest and they're going to lose the capability. But if you give them the order, they've got not only capability, but more capability. You see, South Africa used to be an export of local goods to the whole continent. Zimbabwe, Zambia, all of them run our trains, all here in Pretoria, West. But what is even more about capability, that's why we asked it. We went to Grindrod in Pretoria West. They made locomotives 50% cheaper than the Chinese and more robust than GE. Now, if you can compete with China, and they're already supplying Zambia, the DRC, but guess what? Sierra Leone. Our own Transnet does not buy from them. And that is an example again where Transnet sees them, well, you know, it's private sector, it's a competitor, but we're saying it's not a question of whether you're public or private, the question is whether you get local jobs. That's a mindset, it's a culture, that we think everything outside is superior. Whereas in our own backyard, as I said, in Pretoria West, local technicians who used to be, I mean, some of the artisans from Atteridgeville, Mamelodi, have been looking for 20, 30, 30 years. They used to go to the old Hansberg. You find them now in the Grindrod plant, and so on. So we've got the capabilities, and no doubt. That's why you can see why the NAL. How do you think we're able to, our land vehicles of the NAL is the vehicle of choice in the whole Middle East, better than the Hummers of the US. Why? Because it's rough conditions, it's robust vehicles, and so on. And that's why, as I said, they've been able to develop an order book, the biggest in history, 35 billion rand of orders that now has on its books. It doesn't even have, even now, the capacity to produce that much. But even as I said, we produce aircraft. So we've got the advantage of immense capabilities. What they didn't have was demand. And our SOEs were not investing, they were not building railway lines, they were not building. As I said, if you take PASA, they are dealing with technology of the 1950s. That is the last time they upgraded their signaling systems, the locomotives and so on. So it's old, and so on. So I think it's really, but as I said, it is positive because they haven't started making the new strategic decisions. If you can just say again that if there's anything we can do is to really invest in rail again. We cannot have a situation where you have products like coal being on the back of a truck. I mean, that is what rail was invented for. So it's really, but there's been no investment in the past 20 years, I must say, in rail infrastructure. No serious investment. The first one is now the manganese line, which we really will make a major change to both the Eastern Cape and Northern Cape. Honorable Chair, if I can maybe hand over to my colleagues to just give some of the other.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. If I can perhaps respond to your question around what happened in China. I mean, you see two things emerging in China. The one is that the Chinese government has made a conscious decision to move from an investment-driven growth path to a much more consumption-driven growth path. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that decision having been made. Some of them are around the need for managing the job creation rates that are required, pollution that's happening in China, the fact that Chinese wage rates are going up. And I think all of that has an impact on South Africa. Primarily so far what we've seen is the negative impact in terms of the impact on commodity prices. And the impact of that is massive. I mean, it's hard to overestimate how big the impact of the commodity price fall has been. If you look at some of our minerals today, the prices are 40 to 50% off the highs that they were in the 2007-2008 period. And if you think back to that time, the economy was growing 5-6% at that period. And I think that's in a sense masked some of the biggest structural challenges that we've had in the economy that the DG has referred to, for example, the underinvestment in economic infrastructure over the years. Honorable Chair, you asked why the gold price is set set in London on the London Metal Exchange. I think one of the challenges there is that the major users of South African gold, South African platinum, iron ore, coal, are often located outside of South Africa. And so our growth path up to now has been this growth path of mining and shipping our mineral commodities to other parts of the world rather than adding value locally. And I think that's part of the reason why when the President at in the State of the Nation this year talked about the 9-point plan, beneficiation was a big part of it. Because if we don't add value to our mineral commodities in South Africa, we're not going to have those jobs created here. We're not going to have the tax revenue that comes from it. We're not going to have the advanced manufacturing that supports it. And as the DG was saying, we've had those capabilities in the past, but we are losing those capabilities, partly because we're not investing enough in adding value locally. If we can add value locally, we can beneficiate our mineral commodities in South Africa. Then we begin to be less exposed to the volatility of the international market for things like platinum. And to use two examples, the Department of Science and Technology, working with the University of the Western Cape, they've been looking at fuel cells. Fuel cells are basically a chemical process that allows you to use platinum to convert hydrogen, in many cases water based hydrogen, into electricity. And in the current context of electricity challenges, it's something that's particularly interesting for South Africa. In Japan, the response to the nuclear crisis was to actually invest in fuel cells. So there's been a big explosion in the number of fuel cells being sold in Japan after the nuclear problems of a few years back. What DFT and DTR are doing, along with our colleagues in the Department of Mineral Resources, is trying to develop the fuel cell sector in South Africa so that we can actually add value to our platinum product, so that we can be less dependent on what happens in China, in the London Metal Exchange in terms of platinum prices, and so that we can also contribute to local jobs and local value addition. So I think the Chinese story up to now, we've seen mainly the negative aspects of it in terms of the commodity prices. But of course, there's a massive Chinese consumer market that's growing, wages are increasing, and the challenge, I suppose, for South Africa is how we ensure that we sell our consumer products, whether those are fresh citrus, deciduous fruit, canned fruit, grapes, how do we make sure that we get those products onto the shelf in China so that the Chinese consumers, where wages are increased quite substantially at the moment, are able to actually buy from us and be able to increase our exports of value-added products. Honourable Chair, I hope that's responded to the question that you posed.
Good morning, everybody. I'll focus more on procurement-related questions and in particular localization. As the DTI, our focus is on local manufacturing. So our definition of local content has to do with manufacturing. And that's why we have the powers in terms of the PFA legislation and regulation to designate sectors for local production. So the DG has indicated that we have about 15 products that have been designated for local production. And there are instruction notes for each and every product that has been designated. The instruction note is issued by the National Treasury, because the National Treasury is the custodian of supply chain policy in government. Now, once the instruction note has been issued, all spheres of government, including state-owned companies, are bound to buy locally manufactured products. So, products that are being bought by each and every government department on a weekly basis will include textile products. So, meaning all government departments must buy locally made products. At 100%, we don't allow imports, including furniture. We also have other products. We do work with state-owned companies. We work closely with Eskom on the procurement of transformers. The instruction note for transformers is not yet out, but we are able to use Regulation 9.3 to support local procurement and manufacturing of transformers. And we have done that with a number of municipalities. So that is the opportunity. The challenge we have, though, is that there is supposed to be a mindset, because if it is not designated, certain departments and certain companies think that it's a license to buy an imported product. Whereas that's not the case. We are saying let them use 9.3 to support local manufacturing. And we are going around the country across municipalities trying to sell the idea that, you know, we have the opportunity to use 9.3 to support local manufacturing and achieve the target of 75%. Local procurement. So that's what we do. So it's not a concept. We designate, and once it's designated, there is a requirement to buy locally manufactured goods. And we have worked with the Auditor General, and we are pleased to report that even the Auditor General is now starting to audit expenditure on tenders designated for local production. Now, on the interaction with other state-owned companies, and the DGR is hosting the state-owned companies procurement forum, where a number of state-owned companies are represented by procurement officials. There is a discussion there not only on local production but also on supplier development, because that's another element to make sure that we develop new suppliers of products. So there is a discussion, and the DTI is providing secretarial services as well as formally hosting that forum, which is important for the transformation of procurement in the country. And lastly, on my side, it's around, I think it's the increase in aggregate demand generally. But not only the state that must play a role in increasing that demand. That's why the importance of local procurement accord, where labor, which is the biggest buyer of textile products anyway, can play a role in increasing demand in the state, including the private sector. Internationally, we can't, in terms of the WTO regulations and the trade-related investments, we can't force the private sector to buy local. We use this instrument to force the public sector because it's not allowed at the WTO. And that is why we have agreed that NEDLEC to have this accord, making sure that, you know, the private sector, labor, as well as government, we commit ourselves in buying locally manufactured goods, because all of us can make an impact on demand. And within government, generally what we are saying, and we are in discussion with the National Treasury, is that there is an importance for us to have transversal contracts, meaning where we can pull our buying together. Because there's no sense if we have a small municipality buying its own valves there and you know, transformers. It makes sense that if we pull the buying together, we can be able to drive many programs, including you know, develop new suppliers, but also increasing the economies of scale, you know, because if we can buy, for example, uniforms as different government departments, we'll be able to negotiate discounts, but also save on the systems instead of, you know, going as individual government departments. And that's what we are discussing with the National Treasury. Yes.
Honorable Sheikh, I could just come back to one of the final questions about Solana, and then just to mention just another example of an important one is as you asked the question about is it having an impact on the ground here. As I say, unfortunately, some of these decisions have only been made in the past year, 8 months ago. So the effects takes 2 to 3 years for it to show. But the one which is now a very good one is, for example, in last year, the decision was made at Operation Okisa to designate, and there was a big debate between Transnet, between the National Treasury, DTI, and but they did manage to issue the 1.4 million tender by TNPA for the tugboats. Now, many times before this one, and those tugboats is 1.4 million, and this November, the first tugboats will roll off the line, all totally manufactured locally. But before, we always used to have a big fight with Transnet, where they say, no, we need this tugboat immediately. We can't wait to do it locally. We can just get it quickly straight from abroad. And they imported these tugboats. But as I said, in last year, the decision was made at Operation Bakisa that we will designate all Navy vessels and Transnet vessels. So again, but now we see the results. So the fact is up and running, employing people, expanding, and as I said, by November this year, they have our first tugboats at 1.4 billion. And finally, on Saldanha, as I said, about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we designated Saldanha as one of the additional industrial development zones. What was happening is that, you know, there's been a massive development of the oil industry around Angola, Nigeria, about the west coast of Africa. But all the oil rigs go past our coast, and we get less than 1% of them, which stops here for repairs. For both shipbuilding and for repairs, and they go on and they go to Singapore, and they go to Asia for those repairs and so on. So, Saldanha made in the feasibility studies, and we worked very collaboratively with the Western Cape government, with the Saldanha municipality to develop the IDZ. And it was designated as a massive potential for oil and gas sector, and then for rig repairs. So what happened is, again, part of the operation, they've agreed on three major projects that was agreed in. So the link between the IDZ is basically the land is all owned by TNPA. All the investment of the refurbishment must be done by TNPA for us to go. Once they come there, the actual repairs will be done by private companies, by the investors. So you had a bit of a chicken egg. The private sector wanted to come and use us. As I said, we've got all the artisanal skills here. We do do it, but for very limited vessels, because we can only take one oil rig at a time. So if they can't get here to Cape Town, they go to Walvis Bay, because they can get it done there. So they have to buy hospitals. We don't have the facilities at Sultana to do the repairs. So the key thing was then to build, to extend the berth, 205, create a rig repair facilities, and as I said, that investment, TNPA, and that only was unlocked at the Operation Pakisa because we had transit in the room. Luckily we had Minister Tukhadebe was there. We then made the strategic decision, as I said, that they will undertake the 7 billion investment. It immediately unlocked the 2 billion from the private sector. But now we will be able to do all those things. The important thing about rig repairs and ship repairs, it's very labor intensive. You need thousands of artisans to go on there and fix these things and so on. So now we will be, everything again in terms of the impact, they started the construction now. They started issuing those tenders, the engineering studies are going to complete. You will really only see a fully functioning hub in 5 to 7 years' time. Everything will be up and running. And so on. But that is why, as I said, so I think sometimes we obviously have very high expectations because of the unemployment rate, but at least the good thing is the project has started now. There also is a massive training program now underway to prepare people for the skills so that when they do come, we will be able to do that. But that is an example of synergy between, as I said, the final one is Kuha. As you know, we've got the manganese airport and spoke about beneficiation. All the mines are up and running in terms of manganese. What Transnet used to argue, because they were worried about their short balance sheet, they decided initially before Operation Pakisa that they wanted to bring that manganese down here to Sultana, which is quicker distance. It also is cheaper because they've already got the existing Sishen line and so on. And then they didn't want that oil and gas facility here. So they've been always been resisting building oil and gas because they wanted to use it for manganese, which will immediately go to their bottom line. So that is why there was this dispute or this tension between the IDZ and TNPA and so on. As I said, it would have been good in the short term for Transnet, but bad for the country. Because by this new decision which they then made is to use Kuha as the terminal. Is A, you both develop both areas now. So Western Cape develops and Sultana develops as oil and gas. Kuha develops as a manganese terminal. But already Kuha has a big investment because manganese, the Chinese have already, they've already got engineers on the ground. They will build a massive manganese beneficiation plant in Kuha because they will then get the manganese coming down from there. They will add value to it so they will export some of it. But there's enough manganese both for beneficiation. So you created now an entire manganese beneficiation, you're upgrading the railway line, you've developed the Northern Cape and all three. So that is just, I'm saying, is that the most important is the strategic decisions these SOEs make, which we all will see down the line. You will see massive, we'll be able to start hitting unemployment figures. And I think the real delay was we didn't make these decisions, as I said, 10 years ago. But as I said, there's been a sea change over the last few years.
Thank you, DJ. This is the issue of a duty-free trade between the other countries. How is it going to affect our economy as the ICs? Is it because the DVI was presenting in the economic development, as I said yesterday, it spoke of a duty-free trade between the Sadiq countries. how is it going to affect us, especially within transit, or duty-free does not apply on rail or on the sea, or is it just applying on other ways of exporting materials? The issue of 90-10 that has been also presented to us by ESCOM in saying that the black industry should be given 10% or 10% of ESCOM procurement. Is it the president also mentioned, but is that real? Is it a law? Is it a rule that applies to every company, or is it just something that is made up for a control measure of the company? Any other questions, members?
Yes.
Honorable Murabe, and Honorable Teddy, and Honorable Mare.
No, thanks, I didn't hear the team was responding dealt with the question of the protection of our industries. I think it's important that we really clarify that. In light of what has already alluded to, the example that we made between Transnet and Inroads, instead of procuring locally, they decided to go abroad. I mean, obviously, if you don't have legislation that compels them to say that, look, for the benefit of our country, we need to empower ourselves instead of, because you said that there is a capacity. I think if you can actually clarify that particular aspect, I'd be very much happy. Maybe extending the question that has been actually raised about the 10%, I must say that this presentation, it has really helped a lot, because quite often we've been told that there's no capacity here. That's why sometimes we go abroad and all of that. It is really helping, because now we can really understand that we do have capacity. Maybe some people, when they are here, they just decide to do things differently. In terms of the actual beneficiary in the form of ownership, we must appreciate that as and when we industrialize, we create jobs and all of that. That is it's a very good progress, a good report that we're getting, but I'm specifically interested to actually understand in terms of dial ownership, are we really able to change the patterns of ownership in the strategic economy sector, particularly those that were disadvantaged, which will be obviously blacks, if I have to put it that way. Yeah, I think those are the things that I really wanted. But the last point, it was maybe the state-owned company is not accountable to public enterprise, which is the question that I was interested in. Have you attempted to actually engage PRASA with regard to the stories that have been on our televisions, on our news about the locomotives procurement in Spain and all of that, whereas we've got the very same capacity? Have you tried to interact with them, engage with them to really say that it was a very wrong investment, if you believe in you that it was a wrong investment, instead of investing locally? Thanks.
The first one is just a suggestion that perhaps in the next quarter we might need this kind of interaction or engagement with the entities that we're talking about being present, especially in the whole range of issues, in particular issue of procurement and all the other things. But I would have earlier on identified there perhaps a document of some sort in terms of all the issues that are talking about. We talk about each and every, the analysis of each and every, but the best model could be agency where we sit under one roof with EDI and all the agencies that we're talking about. The last one talks to, I don't remember how you responded to my question around our people being abused in the area of companies that are fronting people. I don't remember any response in that regard. The mechanisms should be tested in the process of you saying yes, indeed,
women or young people, people rejecting things or whatever, are benefiting, while they are not necessarily benefiting.
Thank you, Jason. And first, I want to go with a comment and then a request. in the case of the South Island behavior, yeah, they can know it's my constituency, that's why I know it quite well. In the long term, I think the Taylor Bay would be extending this in the case of Bower. So space would become a problem there, as well as for the building of boats. You could pair boats, heavy boats, three boats. Saldanha Harbour is the biggest in South Africa in the sense of a natural harbour and the deepest one, natural-wise. So we've got still plenty of space. So a second thing that we must focus after the ordinary could be a volume of boats, because that space in Table Bay eventually will be taken over with Harbour in the long term. That also should shift that direction. And the next one is actually a request on my side, because the Director General and the all you sitting here as senior members or executive members of the department, you also liaise with other departments. There's one serious problem coming forward within the South Downland Bay area. The municipality have spent a lot of money now, and the media plan as far as water and all of that is concerned. But there's one major issue coming up, and I want to mention to you that you actually engage with the corporate governance, and the other department is water and sanitation, and that's the word sanitation. Because the serious problem, they should in the long run be built a major plant for sanitation for the three towns of Saldanha, Finneberg and Langevin to one point. And in between those three points is RDZ. So it's going to be a major project, more than 320 million. There's no way a municipality that's a great city can even manage that out of 5 years plan even. So we need the help in that regard. And the influx of people that will come, I mean, this, as you already said, it's a medium plan within 5 years. So a lot was spent now by the municipality, even on the roads and all of that, to actually build a lot and be actually accelerate in the realism of low-cost housing. And additional allocation of 85 million was done last week to extend further on that. But I just think you, as far as municipal infrastructure grants is concerned, with the other director, please liaise with him in that specific regard. Otherwise, we'll be in the medium term 5 years, and then we've got a major problem down there.
Thank you, Digit.
Digit,
I've got a little concern that I'm just thinking, because we have a problem of unemployment. The issue of the terminal of building the locomotives is in Pretoria, and some is in PE. There is something that is being built in PE. I don't know what it is. I can't really make my mind up, but there are wagons. I think wagons are built also in PE. And the other part of the train are built in Pretoria. Maybe there is also in Devon, I'm not sure. But my question is, in creating more jobs, can't we have one? Because we are saying we've got a shortage, we are running short of these locomotives, and we are running short of what we are procuring right now. Can't we expand? Or if we are trying to expand to other places, like if we've got one in Pretoria, and then Pretoria does not have a seat, as far as I know, we don't have a seat in Pretoria. So we can get another inland part and build maybe and have another place where we can build more and maybe train more students that are coming from university, our graduates that are not working right now.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, I think we will definitely take those comments and the suggestions made. Let me very quickly then turn to, very briefly, I think you raised the question of the duty-free trade on the continent. I think, yes, our biggest growth is going to come now from the continent, and they saved us. As Stephen mentioned, the thing is 37% of our exports went to China, but it was all raw materials.
And what has happened is that is slowed down. And also our other big market, also roughly about 30% used to be Europe. That has also slowed down as well, the problems in Greece and elsewhere. So our biggest savior so far has been the continent, as all our exports of manufactured goods, agro-processing has been continent. So that is why. And as you know, there was a breakthrough now in terms of the free trade area between SADC, COMESA and East Africa Community. The 26 countries, right, almost came to Cairo. We've agreed on a plan for reduction of tariffs and more duty free and so on. So that again, that decision was made earlier in the year they also designated the AU Transport Minister has also now designated South Africa as the manufacturer of the locomotives for the whole continent. So that is also going to give our industry massive potential. I think on the question of the protection of our local industry, I think as I indicated, we've unfortunately had massive leakages, and I think the Prasa one is a case in point, but it used to be until 2-3 years ago when we developed these designations. I think it's 4 years old, 4 years, the designations was done. Before that, as you know, all our SOEs, from Prasa, Transnet, Eskom, all of them, their first trip was a foreign trip for suppliers. And they, so that was the culture, that was the law, and that was the situation, and so on. So we've only started reversing that 4 years ago. But as I said, we've had to designate it because we're using the Minister of Trade and Industry. The Minister, we have to do it, we do our research, we then send it to the Minister of Finance, he issues a practice note, and then this practice note goes to as binding national government, provincial government, local government, and SOEs. But they wait for that progressive note, and so on. If it's not, if there's no note issued, they continue their buying, and so on. So that's why if you ask us on our comment, as I said, our issue again is not the management problems in Prasa, it was the strategic decision to buy. And not to buy those things locally. As I said, I mean, the funny thing is that we supply many other countries with exactly the stuff we bought in trade and so on. So again, it was a strategic, strategically not the right decision to make by Prasa. But as I said, we are only going to, and I think I welcome that thing, is to have everybody in the same room, and I think we would really welcome that. Because, as I said, we must make it a culture that, as I said, Europe has no laws, but it is just accepted. Germans think they make the best trains. Alstom makes the best trains. And they not only make the best trains, they force the DRC to buy for France. When they issue those contracts, they provide funding, and then they tell the government in DRC, you must buy a European equipment, and we're only going to give you the funding on condition you buy European goods. So, but Transnet has been compete with that, and so on. So, as I'm just saying, we must change our whole way of operating, and then also people make these excuses that we don't have capabilities. As I said, it is not true. Not only that it's not, but they know, because for example, transformers. Before Eskom used to buy all its transformers locally, they never imported one thing before. So it is an invention in their own minds that we don't have the capabilities. It is an excuse not to build local industry. And then so I think we must entrench that now as the new culture that we can do it. And I gave the example, I know for 15 years we've been fighting with PNPA about the tugboats, about the cranes at the port. The cranes are imported. As I said, even Madupi, we take the iron ore from Sichuan, we export it to China. China makes iron ore into steel, and then we buy the steel to Madupi, and we bring it back. And it could have been done by the Vale Park. So I think, as I said, but that is where we've gone wrong, but we have I think on the fronting and BEE, they didn't deal with that issue of the black economic empowerment and local production. As I indicated, the first priority for us is to ensure that we make it locally. Whether it is, no matter what, it is, if we have a choice between a South African company producing a local and a foreign company, you must go local. Then the second thing is, we must now be strict about black economic empowerment. As you know, again, as the DTI, we've amended the code, we've got the act in place again for more than 10 years. What we are doing now is we are tying our incentives to black economic empowerment. For example, and we've been building up and we've been warning the industry, but now when we issue incentives, we must be level 4. So a few years ago, we said to the companies, give us a plan. In 3-4 years' time, you can come, but we'll give you an incentive. And then we prepared them. We said, come May 2015. We will then only take applications if you're level 4. So you must do something about that economic empowerment, you must even pass it out yourself. I think Transnet must supply the same every day. You don't have to worry about 2010 or 90-10. Transnet can just make an instruction in their tender document. They say, we will only buy locomotives from somebody who is a level 4 company. And then you deal with the question of empowerment once and for all. And you don't have a problem, you don't have to pay extra, you don't have to do it. I'll give you an example of the ARVs. We and the Minister who sets the prices. Before we had to respond to the world or to the price of pharmaceuticals, now we are the biggest market for ARVs. We set the price. And we've been able to bring down the prices of ARVs and it's made 60-70% of the delays manufactured in South Africa. By AFCOP, by Ashford, and so on. I think the lesson is that we must achieve both localization. Now, when the fronting has happened, and this has been given me a bad name, what happens is many of the SOEs, they give it to a BE company, and they think they're doing BE, and then the BE company imports. And that is why, for example, at companies like Aberdeen Gables and PowerTech, losing, so people get fired in the Eastern Cape, 600 people close down, you get London and PE being affected, and then the importers. So, in terms of, we've got now in the Act, we've got fronting provisions, a criminal offense now. So, we, as I said, so our instruction to SAE is, you must, as a condition, you must buy local. Secondly, and then there must be the EE. So it's not mutually exclusive. It is actually reinforcing each other. And the tugboats I spoke about, in terms of shipbuilding, it is our black industrials that names up the company. So the black-owned company that are making many of these things. And then finally, in shipbuilding, as indicated, I think, as I said, we're going to, both the Navy and TPA have now issued their, for boat building and shipbuilding, so we're reviving those industries. A lot of the shipbuilding is also going to take place in Richards Bay. But also, I think, as I said, we around both Simonstown, Saldana, other areas, there's also space for us to create a shipbuilding industry. I think that's just, we take the point of the water and we will communicate that to our colleagues.
Thank you, DG. I don't think there is a follow-up question, Honorable Murabella. We don't have enough time. But I'll give you a very short one.
No, first, DG, quickly, you are talking about the level 4. In the light of or in the context of our ministry, can you just make it simpler? What do you mean about the level 4? Because I've got the... Instead of not the company, instead of problem about levels, is the things like CIDD and all of those requirements that, yeah, I hope that you get my point. Thanks.
Okay. Very quickly, as I said, we can come to the presentation. What we have is the codes of practice and then you get scored and so on. So obviously level 1 means you properly empowered. And if you're a black-owned company, for example, you're 50.1% black-owned, more automatically a level 1. Or if you're 100% owned, black-owned, you're level 1. But then also you're a level 2 company, 51% black-owned. And so, and then for the other companies, let's say previously white-owned company, if they do empowerment, which is they have a BE partner of about 26% BE, and they also do procurement of a certain level, and they do skills, they can then also actually go right up to level 2 and level 1 even. So you can hear, so it will be for black-owned companies, and majority black-owned companies will automatically be there, but also any company. So you get many companies like Oceana, who is level 1, level 2. But what they've done is they then got 25%, 26% black shareholders. All their suppliers are black, so anybody can come up to that. If you do something about empowerment, you can get to level 1. So because we are introducing this, as I said, up before this year, we always told companies, okay, because we wanted to get the economy moving, we wanted to get job creation, that was our main responsibility, we said, give us a plan to become empowered. And so after now 12 years of the Act, we said, now you've had enough time. It is 21 years now, you've had a chance. Now we say you must be there to get government procurement. So that's why I'm saying Transnet must decide what it can be. For some products, they can make it level 2. For some products, level 4 is something which is easily attainable for anybody who does something about BEE. So we're saying, let's start maybe with level 4, and over time, you can give companies a chance to become level 1. But that shouldn't be, but people shouldn't be able to play the one. Localization and BEE is not contributing for each other, actually. And also, many companies will do empowerment, as I gave an example of Altec and PowerTech and Aberdeen, because they get local work. If they don't get any work locally, they obviously stop suffering. They have to retrench people. They can't do, you can worry about BEE if you're not even surviving as a company. But if they now get the transformers being supplied to ESCOM, they can then do their black economic empowerment. They can invest in skills. They can invest in their suppliers because they've got the contracts with ESCOM. So BEE and localization is actually the two parts. Both of them are necessary for transformation.
Thank you, DJ. And thank you for the information that you have given us. It has really opened our mind. I think it's a problem with us as South Africans. We believe in European countries or outside South African products. I think we are afraid of losing on our own, or we are undermining the capacity that we have. Because I cannot understand a company that cannot use local products and prefer products that are coming from outside. Let me take an example of this. You know, we've got these solar geysers that we have that are coming from outside. I have been very outspoken about these solar geysers because I've got a bad experience on solar geysers in my area. I almost did not go home last year for 3 months. I could not go home because every time I go home, the people around in that area will flock into my house. And they had a problem during winter with the solar geysers that cannot stand the winter of annual loss, but it's very cold in that area. So those solar geysers could not stand the conditions of the weather in that area. And they were coming from Kenya, as I was told that they are coming. They were imported from Kenya, and they could not stand the weather conditions. That's what I read with NH. Then, I don't know whether it's Kenya or whatever, but it's not African made. And also, in the other committee where I said in the economic development, we had a problem when we were visiting SABF in Pretoria. We had a problem with products that are being sold, acquired from outside the country, used in Medupi power station. Those products did not have the approval of the SABF. As a result, we had some few problems in that power station. We raised that. We have raised that with the department, we have raised that with public enterprise, we have raised it with economic development. Because we as South Africans, because we are undermining our own products and our own capacity, we end up having in our hands products that are not quality assured here
I think there's a lot members that we need to do, or we need more interaction with the DPI and the SOEs. There are many things that have come up that need our attention and that needs the attention of DPI. Thank you very much, DG and your team. And also thank you very much, members. You have been helpful today to me. Thank you and keep on doing that. And there are minutes that we need to deal with in our agenda. We thank you very much. The department is released. And every other person is released except the members of this committee. There are our minutes, members. Let me report to the minutes in front of you. The minutes of the 12th August. 5th August, next. The 5th of August, 12th August, yeah, both 12th August. It was a joint meeting, the other one. Honorable Mare.
Okay, because only on the first one, the oldest one, 5th of August, that's 6th. Yeah. Stop. That's the slide change. I moved for the report on Saldana because I didn't think that that was. So I didn't move for the report on
Server.
And I just changed it around.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, I proposed for 7.
Of the
changes.
With the changes.
Yes.
Second.
Thank you.
Let's go to the
12th
August. Translate. The strategy. The transit is of last week, ne?
Yes.
Yes.
And would I get them?
You move for the second. I was not here. Already. Okay, you seconded. And then the same day, the joint meeting. No, this is already by parliamentary budget office.
On that one, Chair, I don't know, I just asked the secretary, will he collaborate with the secretary of the other committee when they do the minutes? Because I don't want it to be different. Okay. And the other committee that was there, but as they should be the same.
Yeah, they are adopting the same thing.
Okay, then I move, fine.
Second is by, who was there on that day? By Nguyenge, Honorable Nguyenge. Oh, okay, can you do the announcement?
Honourable Member, we've been invited to the CNA breakfast.
That is happening tomorrow at the Grand West from 6:30 to 9:30. The minister will be briefing, the minister will be with all the CEOs, and the minister will be tabling the report, the shareholder report on stable companies. So, the shareholder's report on stable companies. So it will be a CNA breakfast at the Grand West Casino.
So, members, those who have interest of going should indicate so that we see if they need transport and all of that.
And Honorable Mare, I received your response already.
I didn't put the whole reason for it.
Okay.
So you will interact with Uti Zambi before the end of the day today. And so we don't have to wait until 6 o'clock in the
evening. You can like consider
now.
Think about now.
Before you leave, you can indicate if you are available.
I'm available.
Okay.
I will also be available. But I will be.